107.2 FM.
Radio Reverb.
Hey everybody, this is Lisa Moore for the Brighton Business Show here on Radio Reverb on 97.2 FM. Available to download as a podcast and listen again on the website. This is our September show. Hey Helen, how are you?
Very well, Lisa. Very, very well indeed. How are you?
I'm all right, thank you. Are you relieved now the children are back to school?
Yes, I am. It's of course, it's wonderful to have time off. It's wonderful to make memories and do all of those things. But I and my children thrive on structure and routine. And it's been really good to get my work head fully back on and get back immersed in exciting stuff that's coming and all that. So yeah, no, I'm feeling good.
That's good. It is. It's nice for everybody. I think I spoke to my youngest before she went back to school and said to her, are you looking forward to going back? Expecting her to say no. She said yes. I think she was looking forward to seeing her friends and yeah, just getting back into that routine and structure does make life a little bit easier, doesn't it?
It does.
Yeah. So today's show, we always have a theme, as hopefully people have worked out now. We're going to talk about PR, public relations. And it's one of those things that everybody knows about or has heard about. What do you believe PR is, Helen?
That's a good question. I believe that it is a raising an awareness of what you do in interesting ways.
Yeah.
And I didn't really know anything about PR for the first few years of my business. I didn't have a clue what that was. I didn't have any connection to PR whatsoever. I was just building my business from a community and I didn't know how else to do it. And then it wasn't until I started following a few people that then I started to understand what it was all about and really got immersed in it.
Yeah.
What about you?
Yeah, pretty much the same for me, really. I hadn't thought about it. You know, I'd heard of PR, read about PR, and it seemed to be all about just getting into glitzy magazines. That was all I imagined it to be, was that PR was all about appearing in Vogue or Forbes or magazine articles, really. So I didn't really understand much about it until, I suppose, the first time I really understood about it was when I had one of my Athena networking ladies was a PR lady. So she explained it a little bit more. And obviously magazines come into it, but radio, TV, writing, working with journalists. And we've got a fantastic guest today. I am Julie Brown. Julie Brown, who has been a journalist for many of her years, but has a really interesting story as well. She's going to talk to us a bit more about PR and what it is. But my first experience, I think, of getting PR for myself was after I'd redone my personal training qualifications. I trained with a company called Premier Training International. And I was a very good girl because I gave them a testimonial after I finished the course. You know, you get those emails saying, please give us your feedback. And I did. I know a lot of people don't, but I actually did give them a feedback. And I'm so glad I did, because I had a call from them saying, thank you so much for your testimonial. How would you like to be in a video recording your testimonial? And as a thank you, we'll come and record some testimonials for you of your clients in your fitness studio. So it was a really fantastic opportunity. And I grabbed it with both arms. And the video is still somewhere on YouTube. I'm sure they don't use it anymore because it would have been, I don't know, 10 years ago now. And they came and filmed me and it was very nerve-wracking. But it was a great opportunity because I could then use that in my business to sort of showcase who I was, what I'd done, and tell my story. So that was sort of my first experience. But so now I know, Helen, you've been in Forbes, haven't you?
I have.
So tell us a bit more about how that came about.
Well, as I say, I didn't really understand the concept. I think probably the first time that I started to understand what PR was when I did my TEDx talk. Because all of a sudden what happened then was my video was on a platform with however many million subscribers. And that was giving those people direct access to me, whereas before I wouldn't have had that. So we're thinking about reach here. And I guess reach is a good thing to think about when we're thinking about PR. It's one piece of content, which was a talk, that got out to a lot of people. And as I started to find out more about that, I was interested, how can I make that work for me even more? How can I use that? And because my talk was about my story, I wanted to think about how I could use my story. So I joined up to this group. It's Janet Murray, and she is, you know, a specialist in this sort of thing. And her whole business was about that. So I attended conferences and I got to speak to people in the press. I got to speak to journalists when I attended these things and got to really understand. And when I said to them, I've got a story, and they were like, okay, what's the story? And I'm like, oh, well, I struggled being a mum and I went a bit loopy. And that's kind of it, really. And they were like, well, there's no angle on that. You know, they were really brutal. They were like, what's so special about that? You know, you really need to be thinking about what the angle is, what the hook is, to make something really relevant to an audience, to a particular publication. And so that's where it kind of started for me. Mm. So then I started getting really interested, because my whole business is around storytelling and it's around people helping people share their story. I started understanding really that it's not necessarily about the story itself. What's the message that you're giving? What is the purpose of that story, and how can that purpose help people? So as that started weaving into my business and I started getting more into detail about how people could deliver a message using their story, so I was looking at how I was doing this myself with PR. Mm. And I think I started writing on, it's called Medium now, was it HuffPost?
Yes.
So yeah. I got an article in HuffPost. And I did that by writing the article, thinking of the angle, and then pitching it. And that was at a time when you had to pitch it and it had to be accepted, and it got accepted. And that was like a huge win. I was like, oh my goodness, that's amazing. That was the first one. And it just kind of went from there. Podcasts followed with using the same method. And then the biggest one, which was the biggest breakthrough for me, was an independent article, which I pitched for. And it was off the back of a speech that Theresa May had done. And I analysed that speech and gave my view on it. And actually, it was what she did well in it. Pitched that to the Independent. They said yes, wrote the article, and it went up online. And it did really well. And loads of people read it. And I was able to use that. And, you know, it's still on my website, to share a sort of like a showcase of my expertise with public speaking. And then after that, I think there was a hashtag on Twitter. I can't remember. Is it Journo Request?
Yes, journal request was one of the things that I learned about. Yes.
I would look at that religiously. I was really tuned into it all for a time. I was using my own methods to get in front of people, build relationships and things like that. But I would follow the journal request. And then one day this request came out and it was from a journalist for Forbes. And they were looking for contributors it was around public speaking. And so I contacted them, I gave them my angle, and then I wrote a piece that then was contributed to the Forbes article. I guess there's been a number of other things since then, but I really enjoyed the process of that. It was quite thrilling, it was quite exciting, it was quite nerve-wracking. And then when you actually get the win, it's like, whoa, that's amazing. And that led to me being on the telly, Latest TV, in Brighton to promote my conference, which led to a guest spot on BBC Sussex.
Yes.
Which led to this.
Yes.
So there you go.
It's amazing, isn't it? I mean, it sounds like listening to you compared to my sort of experience of PR, you were very driven behind what you were going to get out of it. I think for me, I didn't really embrace the fact that, you know, I'd had this a brilliant opportunity and the video had gone out there. And then I just sort of sat back and went, oh, okay. I did get featured in Women's Health. I got featured in Women's Fitness magazine and the Daily Mirror did an article. There's a hilarious picture of me with a pair of boxing gloves on.
I've seen it.
Yes. I think it's probably still on my Facebook page. But they were all around a story of, you know, a single mom with two young kids, building a business, doing it on her own, struggling from divorce, et cetera, et cetera. But I love the fact that you really learned how to use your angle. I didn't. And, you know, I'm really hoping today I'm going to learn a little bit more. Now, obviously, I've got a gig on speaking on radio. I've done other radios. I've done some more local radio in Sussex, written articles and things like that. But it's very interesting, isn't it, how even if you don't have a plan, you can still get opportunities for PR and they can still come your way.
Yeah.
But actually, I think the lesson I've just learned listening to you is probably having a bit more of a plan might make a bit more sense.
Well, I think that because I was very focused on it for quite a chunk of time. And the reason why I was so focused on it is because I was helping people prepare talks, right? Mm. But then there was the how do you get talks? And because I've got my TEDx and because I was successful in getting some other things, I had a way of doing it. And so yeah. I had to think about that in terms of, well, if I can't just help people prepare talks, I have to help people get visible through things like I didn't necessarily coach people on articles, maybe blogs, but definitely how to deliver a podcast interview, how to pitch for and get a podcast interview, how to pitch for and land a keynote talk. So I guess it was really something that I was very switched onto, like a taxi light, you know.
It made sense, didn't it? Because it was, if you compare it to a personal training business, which is what I had at the time, that's very different to helping people with their public speaking and visibility and all that sort of thing. You know, personal training was about health, so I wasn't really thinking about PR. But I guess now if I look at how Joe Wicks has got to, you know, his level of fame, there's definitely been a lot of PR. And I do remember hearing, I can't remember who it was. It might have been in a book, but somebody had said that they had an email from this guy called Joe following something that they posted on social media. And he'd then reached out to this famous lady, and I can't remember who it was. It will come into my head, I'm sure, and offered her you know, some advice on losing weight or whatever it was. Maybe it was a tactical move from his point of view. I think it probably was. But that led to him becoming a bit more famous with what he does. And now look at him.
I think there's a lot to be said in that. I think about sort of since I built a following, you know, obviously it took a long time to build a following. And I don't like the term influencer. I can't stand it. But I guess I've had opportunities because of my following. And there was a Human 24, H&M 24, yeah. And they're a company about 24-hour human performance. I really liked what they were posting. I was sharing some of their stuff, and they really appreciated the fact that I shared it. So they asked me to just sample some of their energy products and give a review, which I did. And then I went on their podcast.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, it's that kind of like mutual, that is PR as well, because you're leveraging other people's audiences. And, you know, that's can be really, really beneficial because you're getting in front of people that you wouldn't normally get in front of.
Radio Reverb. 97.2.
Radio Reverb.
Probably now is a great time to bring Julie in. So welcome, Julie. It's lovely for you to be here with us today. You've just listened to Helen and I sort of talk a bit about what we understand PR to be and, you know, some of our experiences of. But from your point of view, what exactly is PR and why does it matter? I know that's a very, very big question.
Hi, well, thanks for having me. It's lovely to be here. It sounds like you've both done a really good job of getting PR anyway, so you're obviously quite clued up. People often think that PR is about sending out press releases. They're just trying to get in front of the press by sending out loads of press releases here and there. Wherever they can find to send it, they'll send it. But actually, it's far more than that. And in fact, I don't advocate sending press releases, and we can talk about that in a little while if you like. But PR is really communication. It's communicating with intent, really, is how I like to think about it. And it's communicating with the people who need to hear from you. I think what a lot of people forget is that everything they do is PR. So we always think it has to be, I've got to be in Forbes or in the newspaper or in a magazine or on a podcast. Actually, everything we do is PR. So our own blogs, our social media, it's all around communicating the right message and having a reason for doing it. that really is what PR is. And I think a lot of people think PR stands for press release, and it doesn't. As you said, Lisa, it stands for public relations. So it is about having relationships with the public, hopefully your public and the people that you want to work with. So that's what I see as PR. And I prefer to think of it, even when I'm speaking about PR, I try use the term media coverage rather than PR. Yeah. So I'm helping people get coverage in the media. And I think you've alluded to it already. Media is no longer just a magazine or a newspaper. Mm. It is being on somebody else's blog. It is being on a podcast or on a YouTube channel or even on an Instagram Live. Anything where you're sharing your story and your thoughts and your advice, where members of the public can hear it or read it or see it, then that's media coverage.
That does make it easier. I'd never thought it would be PR could mean press release. So public relations was always the thing for me. I never really quite understood what that meant because it sounded a bit odd. But I love the fact that where you say it's communicating with intent. That's the key, isn't it, really, to the whole thing?
It is, absolutely. And I think we forget as well sometimes that when we are, having to do our social media posts and everything else that we have to do in business, we get quite overwhelmed with it. We forget that actually the stuff you put out there is really important. And that's why I like to say with intent, because I know we can all be guilty of thinking, well, I'm just going to have to write something today. I've got a blog to write. I've got a social media post to write. I'll just put something out there. Actually, in my eyes, you're better off not bothering that day if that's how you're feeling, and just go back the next day and do something better and do it with intent. It doesn't have to be long. It doesn't have to be complicated. But you're doing this media PR stuff is about doing it for a reason. You're not just doing it because you like to faff around online all day long. There's a lot behind all of this.
I think that's like a breath of fresh air, and that hopefully there'll be lots of people going, oh, I've got permission not to post today. Because I know, and I can see Helen nodding away here, where you feel that you should. I must post at least 3 times today, or I must write my weekly newsletter. And I've done it where I've just done something for the sake of doing it. And you do sort of feel afterwards, what was the point in that? And nothing happens from it. But when you do something with the right message, with the right purpose, the right intention, that's when you get that magic, isn't it? That's when you get that engagement coming back, because you can connect with somebody. You can feel it, can't you? When you write something that you've done just because you should, there's a different energy. Do you agree, Helen?
Completely. This is very, very relevant for me because it wasn't so long ago. So my business has transitioned quite a lot since COVID, and I'm not so much front facing. So I'm not the consumer side of the corporate side of my business has really taken off. And when I was having a meeting with my mentor, I was like, oh gosh, but I've got to keep showing up still. And they said, the same thing. They said, why do you need to? It's better to put out a really, really great newsletter on LinkedIn, or a really great article, or a really great blog on Instagram or Facebook that's got, it's with intent, as you say, it's got the right energy behind it, and you're feeling really good about it. Mm-hmm. And if that means you reduce down how often you're writing that. I mean, I used to write one big chunky bit of long form content a week, plus 3 posts that I would be posting everywhere. Now that's more like every other week. Mm. And I'm still showing up on Instagram stories because I enjoy that.
Yeah.
But the purposeful content, the content with intent, is fewer, and it feels better. And I've just watched, literally, which I posted on my stories, Gary Vee talking about the same sort of thing, in that he was talking about, he used to, when he was doing his wine library, that's how he got famous for talking about wine. He used to do a video 5 days a week, relentlessly, for years and years and years and years. And then when he launched his VaynerMedia business, he hardly posted at all, because he was in operating mode. And then when he came back from that, he was full of energy. So I think it's also about the times of your business as well. Yeah. What you're actually doing in your business, just because you haven't posted doesn't mean that people are going to forget about you. There's so much content on social media. It's all right. When you post that piece of content that they're really going to take notice of, that's going to be worth it. What are your thoughts on that, Julie?
Absolutely agree. I mean, I think it's quite a good thing to do sometimes is just go back through your social media, and you will spot the content where you weren't on it, that you were just posting for because you felt you had to. And you can feel a bit of embarrassment when you see them, because you think, I may as well have not bothered, because that's not added to anybody. And obviously, as a business owner, we're all about adding value. And if you can't do that, then just don't bother. I mean, I wouldn't advocate disappearing for 6 months, but certainly, you know, having a plan where you feel okay about missing posting. I mean, I'm on holiday at the moment, as you know, and at the beginning of last week when I was on holiday, I was still posting because I was in launch mode, but my launch finished on Wednesday and I've not really done much since, and it's not worrying me, because if I was to do that, I'd just be doing it for, well, I've got to do it, I'm supposed to be on holiday, but I'll better do this, and it wouldn't be my best work, and there is no point. I think there are some things that are important, e-newsletters. I think if you get into a rhythm with those, you should try and stick with it best you can, or explain to people on your list that you are going to be disappearing for 2 weeks or 3 weeks, so they're not expecting you to show up. So I think that's important, because they're your hottest audience, really, and you want to nurture them in a really good way. And also, if you've got a group, you know, if you do a, like I do a visibility show every Thursday morning in my group, and if I'm not going to be around, I would explain I'm not going to be around because my group are expecting me to show up. But on your other social media, yeah, if you're not feeling it, or you haven't got anything to say that day, then don't bother.
Yeah,
that's how I feel about it.
Everybody who's listening to the show can now go, if you don't feel like it today, don't worry about it. It's fine. So, Julie, you've had a really interesting background. And Helen and I would love you to tell us a little bit more about, you know, you started in the NHS and then you transitioned into journalism and now you're doing what you're doing. We'd love to hear a little bit more about your story, if you're happy to share.
Sure, absolutely. Well, I joined the NHS pretty much from school, really. I did a couple of years of doing other stuff like boring office work. And then I went into the NHS and I was actually a nurse. I was a general nurse, then a psychiatric nurse. And then I moved into what was one of the best jobs ever, although it was very taxing. And that was being an AIDS and HIV counsellor at a big AIDS and HIV centre in Manchester. Mm-hmm. I managed that for a couple of years. It was one of those jobs that you couldn't do, you know, like forever, because it was quite draining, but it was amazing. And I went from there into senior management, NHS management. Did that for a bit, joined the government and did a stint of inspecting hospitals, which was a very interesting / tricky job. Yeah. You know, I was one of those great people that had to go into hospitals and decide how many stars they were allowed to have based on their quality and their competence. So, yeah, that was interesting. So I did management for a while. And what happened is I got a little bit sad about the NHS. It was at the time when strict targets were coming in place. People were struggling to meet them. The whole thing was going to pot. And I was starting to get a little bit, I don't want to use the word disillusioned because I love the NHS, but it was getting a tough place to work. And the results from my work were getting more marginalised because of the way the NHS was working. But I was sticking with it. It was, you know, it was what I did. I was NHS from school. I had to make it better. I wanted to, you know, be that person who could do that. But then, as is often happens with people, something happened that changed my mind, and that was my mum died. Right. And, you know, I felt like I was too young to lose my mum. And at that time when she died, the NHS was a very busy place. It had a lot to do, and I probably didn't get the support I needed from the NHS when she died. And that made me feel a little bit, well, I've been in the NHS for a lot of years, and this is a bit weird now that I'm not feeling the love that I thought I might get. So it happened very quickly. My mum died on a Sunday, and on the Monday morning, I saw a job advertised to be a journalist, and I just decided I was going to do it.
Goodness
now,
me.
This bear in mind, I had no journalism experience. I had no real creative writing experience. I'd done a lot of writing, but it was all report writing for the NHS, report writing for the government. Some of it was published, quite a lot of it actually, particularly when I was inspecting hospitals, but I didn't really do creative writing. So I'm embarrassed to say I just winged it. I just went along to the interview and just told them I could do this job. Yes, I did a lot of report writing. I could therefore turn that into creative writing. I knew what was important. I knew what audiences need to hear. I knew about understanding who your audience was. And yeah, I just made them give me the job, really. It was as simple as that.
7.2 FM.
Radio Reverb.
But I was very lucky because I think people assume that to be a journalist, you've got to have been to journalism college, done a journalism degree, be an expert at writing English. And actually, that's not always the case. And in most cases, it's not true. I suppose if you're going to be an intern, you know, when you, if you go off from university to be an intern, they'll want you to have done some sort of journalism media course. Yeah. But as a grown-up adult, you can change into something like journalism without needing to have all that background. And that's because the companies that employ to be a journalist, you know, the publishing companies, I went to work for one called Bauer, which is one of the big ones in the UK. They are looking for people. They're looking for people with an attitude of a certain kind or skills of a certain kind. And what they look is for that. And knowing that they can train you in the skills of being a journalist. So they can train you to be better at English. They can train you to be better writers. But they can't give you the attitude that you need to be a journalist. You've got to come with that. And they were, and still are, very good at that, looking for a particular sort of person and then training the rest of it into you as needed. So that's what I did.
Yeah. So what are those unique skills or abilities that they're looking for?
Well, you've got to be. It's about. Well, you've got to be interested in people. You can't really be a journalist if you don't want to speak to people. Yes. You haven't got a curious brain. You've got to be curious about things. You've got to want to ask questions. And although I'm not overly an extrovert in any sense of the word, you've got to be brave. You've got to be able to think. I could ring somebody up out of the blue and talk to them, ask them to tell me things that perhaps they don't want to tell me. So you've got to have those sorts of skills, really. The rest can just come along. You know, I could write English, but I couldn't write in a way that a journalist needed to write. I had to learn all those skills, and you can do that really quite easily, particularly if you are working for a big publishing company, because there are lots of well-trained, experienced journalists there that you can just learn from. So it's having that attitude, really, that curiosity, nosy. I like to think that journalists have to be nosy, not be afraid to speak to people, not be afraid to ask the difficult questions and get yourself out there.
It is those difficult questions, isn't it? The ability to make people feel comfortable enough to share.
Yeah,
And I do remember, I think it was the lady that did the Daily Mirror article on me. You know, it was... I got way past my divorce then and didn't really want to go back into that, but she was very easy to talk to, and it felt okay to share some things that, you know, I'd put to bed. I didn't want to talk about them anymore, but she was nice and able to bring that out.
Yeah, and I think the other thing as well is, and this happened to me a couple of times, is that you can be a journalist around something that you're really interested in, like a hobby. So if you ride push bikes, or you're a horse rider, or you're a runner, there's magazines out there that really want you to just be interested and passionate about those topics. Helen, you mentioned there about doing a review of something, nutrition, was it, or drinks or something? I can't quite remember what you said. So if you could go along to a running magazine, for instance, being passionate about running, knowing about running and what's important to people who are runners, then that's another way into journalism. And you see that all the time. You know, I've worked on quite a few specialist magazines, been the editor of a few, and we do look for people who know the subject more than they know journalism. That's really important, to have that credibility on the magazine, to get people working with you that know all there is to know about that particular topic. And when you get that sort of job, it's absolutely amazing. If you do a journalism job that's around your passion, it's more than you could ever hope for, really. It's fantastic.
Thinking about that in terms of business owners as well, if we're thinking about the type of audience and the people that you help in your business, that applies the same, really, doesn't it? If you think about doing that sort of thing about things you're passionate about, that can be linked in some way. It doesn't have to be entirely linked. I mean, you know, my business isn't anything to do with nutritional supplements or health products, but yet the company's ethos is linked with what I do. And so that's where we had a synergy. And that's where I was invited to talk on their podcast, because it was a mindset-based podcast and they asked me to share my story. So I think that's also something really, you know, if you're into, you know, your health or your fitness, or, you know, you have a hobby and you're passionate about it, you can use that as PR that can then naturally link back to your business, right?
Absolutely. And this is one of the things I speak to my clients a lot is remember that you are a human being, not just a business owner. So there are lots of, if you think of it like that, there are so many things you can talk about, you could write about, you can have an opinion on, that might not be 100% relevant to what you're doing as a business owner, but it all leads back. You know, even if you get into, say you got into The Guardian talking about a hobby, or like you said, doing a review or something, you've still been in The Guardian. You can still use The Guardian logo on your website. It still shows that you are a credible human being, regardless of what you're talking about. But yes, of course, if you are a makeup artist, then talking about makeup and makeup artistry in a beauty magazine would be amazing. If you're a speaker or a life coach, being able to talk about motivation in the HuffPost, for instance, is amazing. But it is more than that. You've got to look at the media as being something that there are endless opportunities to be in the media. I would never ask anybody to box themselves off thinking, I only talk about this, and so I've got to look for opportunities around that. So for instance, confidence, you know, if you're a confidence coach, yeah, you might think the only thing I can talk about is confidence, but it's not. There's so many other things. So I work with people a lot about that, you know, just like you talked about earlier, Lisa, looking for the angle, looking at your own interests, your own credibility piece, just seeing what's out there that you can get involved with, because it's all good in the end.
And I find that things that you're passionate about or you believe in. So I followed that for a while, and I was following a few people, and I bought their books and I gave reviews on their books and I shouted about their books online because I was passionate about it. I believed in it. And then in turn, things happened for me as a result of that with them and their businesses. And one of them came to speak at my conference. Mm-hmm. And that was all just because it was a natural thing that I was passionate about. I was willing to review it and shout about it because I believed in it. And then it's like a reciprocal thing.
Yeah, absolutely. If you think about it as well with media covers, you are, like I think you mentioned it earlier, Helen, you are borrowing other people's audience, an audience that you would never get in front of otherwise. So whether it's a magazine, a newspaper, podcast, a YouTube video, the person who you're doing the work with, they've got an audience that you would never see, and you know, you don't know who's in that audience. You might at first glance think, is this really relevant? But you just don't know, and you don't know what it's going to lead to. So until you get to the point where you've got journalists contacting you because they've seen you somewhere and your credibility's grown and your expertise has grown, until you get to that point when journalists are ringing you up saying, we want you in this piece, just think to yourself when you get an opportunity, what can I make of this? And I would always try and say yes to most opportunities that come your way, unless it really goes against your principles or your values, or you think it might damage your business. Then I would just think, can I say the yes to this? Because you just never know where it's going to lead.
Yeah. I think probably Helen and I are both very much like that. We'll say yes to opportunities because you just don't know where things lead. You really just don't know where things lead. And it's, you know, it's the same in a networking environment, isn't it? Is you have those conversations with people. And I talk about it in my networking meetings with Athena. When you're talking about collaborations, people tend to go, well, there's no point me collaborating with that person because their business has nothing to do with me. What does a florist and a podiatrist have in common? Well, actually, you don't know until you have that conversation. You don't know whether that florist and podiatrist have got the same hobbies or it doesn't matter. It's all about having those conversations, isn't it? And being, as you said at the beginning, Julie, curious.
Yeah, absolutely.
Being curious. Yeah. So I know that you obviously became a journalist and then you did really, really well, didn't you? It magazine publisher?
Yeah. Yeah, so when I first joined the journalism world, I took a job as a writer. So I was the lowest of the low in that magazine. So I laughed at the time because as a senior manager in the NHS, I was getting paid quite a lot. And I actually paid more in tax when I was an NHS manager than I actually earned as a junior writer on a magazine. But I've always been quite ambitious. And yeah, I moved quite quickly at the ranks. So I went from writer to, I did a dual role. Just after 6 months, I got the job of events editor. So I was an events editor alongside being a writer for an event that the magazine was involved with. And then I went from there to deputy editor, then editor-in-chief. And then before I left to become self-employed, I was a publisher of magazines, which is, in the journalism world, that's sort of the highest level you can get to before you sort of go off into the management realms of like director level and things. So when you're a publisher, so obviously when you're an editor or an editor-in-chief like I was, you're looking after one magazine and the things related to that magazine. So you might have your magazine, and along with that goes a podcast and a website. So you are an editor-in-chief because you're looking after that group of things, but it's all related to one magazine, one thing. But when you become a publisher, you look after a group of magazines. So I had 12 magazines to start with, 14 at the end. So every one of those magazines has its own editor. So you're like in charge of all of those magazines and all the editors and all the staff. You're in charge of the advertising teams and the marketing team. So that's what I did just before I decided to become self-employed, which was 5 years ago now.
5 years ago. I have a quick question, which is sort of off the cuff of that, actually, is do journalists struggle to find people to write about? Because I think from a business owner sitting here, my view is that, well, who's going to want to talk to me? Because they've got loads of things to talk about. Well, but why, you know, so why would they? But are there journalists sitting there going, I really need to talk to lots of people? So do you think there's a mindset thing with business owners that they don't reach out to journalists because they assume that they've got enough work to do?
Yeah, absolutely that. I hear that a lot. Why would journalists want to speak to me? You know, I'm just I'm just a mindset coach, I'm just a nutritionist. What they don't see is the poor journalist sat at their desk, absolutely frantic because they can't find anybody to speak to. Because, now, I mean, when I first started in the journalism world, the journalists pretty much wrote the features. And the only way to get into the magazine, really, if you were a business owner, was to pay for advertising. So this was a fair while ago now. And that was really expensive. Of course, things have changed so much. And now, again, when I first started, I was just on a magazine and that's all we had. Then suddenly we got a website added and we had a podcast and we had an event and we had TV. And then suddenly you've got all these places to fill with content and you can't put the same content everywhere. It's all got to be different. So things have really turned on its head. And now the journalists really struggle to fill all their places that need content. So they absolutely need people to help them fill it. So you might think you've got nothing to say, but the journalists really need to hear from you. They really need to hear from experts. So if I can give you an example, as a journalist, you can end up, unless you're on a specialist magazine, you could end up writing about all sorts. And I still do freelance journalism now. So I sometimes get calls saying, could you do me a feature about this particular topic? And I generally say yes, because I like writing. I like being nosy about things. Often it's not about a subject I know about. So what I have to do as a journalist is do all the research that I can do so that I can start this feature and get a fair way along. And then at some point, I'm going to need some expert input. So it might be that I'm writing about motorbikes, for instance, and it might be about, you know, how, I talk about motorbikes because I do ride motorbikes. So if I didn't ride motorbikes, I would still take the motorbike piece on. But the story might be about, you know, how can you become faster going around corners on a motorbike, because that's what everybody wants to do. They want to get faster and faster. So I could write that piece. I could talk about biking in general. I could talk about motorbikes and things like that. But when it actually comes to knowing how to go faster around a corner, I'm going to need to speak to an advanced instructor or a policeman or somebody who knows how to do that so that I can get their expert input into that piece. Yeah. And that's how it is for all journalists. You know, they can write so far a feature about nutrition or hypnotherapy or life coaching or confidence or mindset. But when it gets to it, the nitty gritty of this piece, they need some help. And that's where we all come in. And you'll be amazed how much they need. They're just, and I can tell you what, they are frantic. And quite often they're getting close to deadline and they still haven't had that expert input. And that's where we come in. That's where we need to be in front of them saying, hey, we're here. We can do this for you. And they would snap your hand off if you reached out to them.
So the next obvious question, how do business owners reach out to journalists? What's the best way? I mean, Helen talked about the hashtag journo request earlier. What's the best way for us to do it?
That hashtag is amazing. Twitter is an amazing place to be in front of the journalists because that's where they all are. And if they get desperate for content, they need some help, that's often where they will put the shout out. So yeah, hashtag journal request is something to keep an eye on. So you'll see lots of if you go to Twitter and put the hashtag in there, you'll see lots of journalists who are just like that, shouting out, saying, I need a dietitian to help me with this, or I need an ex-policeman, or I need a whatever it is. And it's as simple as answering their call out. So you just, you know, they will say, I need this person. And they will either just say, if you are this person, could you get in touch? Or they will even perhaps give you what they need the answer to. So I need the answer to this question. And if they do that, you just give them the answer to that question, plus your credentials. And if they want to use you, they will use you. And if they don't want, so that's do it. That's follow. That's called sort of doing following up a shout out that a journalist has put out there for help.
Yeah.
The other way to do it, of course, is there are other ways to do it. The other way is to pitch into the media your ideas, which is a whole slightly different thing. But again, it's getting yourself in front of the journalists and saying, I've got an idea for a story or an idea for input to a story that I could have, and this is the idea. Or there's another way, which is newsjacking. And that's looking at what's going on in the media world at the moment, on the news. You know, when you're sat watching the TV, what's going on that you can have an opinion about? And what you do with that is you reach out to journalists, either through Twitter or through connecting with the journalists. And if you're going to use this as a strategy, which I would advise people to do, I would start to do that. I would start to connect with journalists before you even start asking them for coverage. But you reach out to these people that you've connected with and say, you know, this is happening in the news at the moment. I've got a unique take on that, or I've got some input I could have on that. So you're reaching out to them saying, I want to be involved in what's happening in the news at the moment. And they may or may not take you upon that as well. So those are the three main routes, really, into the media. Responding to a shout out from a journalist who's panicking about finding an expert, having your own stories to pitch into the media, or doing the newsjacking route where you're talking about something that's happening in the news. And we all know that there's absolutely tons to get involved with in the news. Just need to sit through the news for an hour every day and know that there's just so much going on out there. Yeah. There's always an opinion to be had about something.
Yeah.
And you don't, it doesn't, again, like I said earlier, it doesn't have to be overly related to your business. It's just about getting your name out there.
Yeah, absolutely. And so when you're responding to, now I've followed you for a while, so I've had your fantastic newsletters every week that give a list of such and such a journalist is looking for this, such and such is looking for that. And I remember reading on one of your emails, and maybe it's on all of them, is respond quickly, be concise and precise, and tell them exactly who you are, what you're doing. And I think there was one that said, you know, tell them your age, where you live, how long you've been a bit, and sort of some really key information that just makes their life easier.
Yeah, absolutely. What the journalist is looking for, particularly when they do the shout outs, is get in touch quickly, because like I just said, mostly they're getting close to deadline and they're having a panic. So get in touch quickly. Then the things you have to remember is that it has to be relevant. So with the shout outs on Twitter, they generally do say, I want to comment on this, and they will tell you what they want to comment on. But when you respond to that, unless they said to you that I want you to give me 500 words or 1,000 words, just be succinct, just answer their question. If they want more, they will ask for more. The big mistake that people make all the time until they realise that they shouldn't do it is to talk about themselves. People often start the email by saying, you know, hi, I'm Julie Brown. I do this and these are my credentials. This is my website. This is where I live. And that's not what they're interested in first. What they're interested in is, can this person give me the help that I need? So what you do is you say, hello, whatever the name is. I've seen that you need a dietitian to answer a question for you. I can help you with that. And just then say, you know, my name is this, and I'm a dietitian. This is how long I've been in business, and this is my website address. And if they like the look of you, they'll get back in touch and say, yes, I would like you to help me. But if they've actually said, this is the question I want answering, then you say, hi, I've seen that you've got a shout out on Twitter. You've got a question you want answering. This is the answer to the question. this is why I'm the person to answer it. So it's, you're always giving them the information first before you talk about yourself.
Yeah.
And when you do talk about yourself, you just give them your name, your business, where you live, if you think that's important. Sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't, and then your website address. They don't need to know much more than that. If they want to know more, they will get back in touch. But often people wax lyrical about themselves first, and that just turns the journalist off, because it's not about you in the end, it's about them and their audience.
Yeah.
It's just like when we're working with our audience, you know, when we put content out on social media or on a podcast or wherever it is that you do your visibility, what you're doing is answering the questions you know your audience wants to hear. You don't, yes, we do tell stories about ourselves, but we generally weave those in to be valuable to the audience. So from a journalist's point of view, when I'm doing my journalism, when I was an editor-in-chief, what's important to me is that I'm satisfying my readers. I need to answer their struggles. I need to give them what they want, because if I don't do that, I'd be out of a job. So what you have to think about as a business owner is that it's their audience that's really important, and you're answering these questions to give some value to their audience. Yeah. So make it valuable. They're not interested in you really at this point.
Radio Reverb.
97.2.
Radio Reverb.
When you're working with the journalists, you're giving them this help. You're answering these questions, but what you're getting in return is a backlink to something. So that's either a backlink to your website, it could be a backlink to a freebie, it could be a backlink to your YouTube channel. So you are getting a massive piece of visibility that's cost you nothing. So it's worth getting this right, because what you get back is just amazing. And that's why you don't wax lyrical about yourself. You just give them what they need, and you'll get the return by putting that backlink in the piece.
That's great advice. I think that will be really useful, really useful. Now, one of the things that I know that you speak about is that you can use media coverage to reduce your marketing overload. So when I think about marketing overload, I think about going back to the social media, posting all the time. So how can we utilize media coverage to help us with our marketing?
If we start from the top, the reason we do media coverage is to get in front of other people's audiences. We've just said that. But what it does for business owners is amazing things for their credibility and their expert status and their relevance. And that can't be underplayed, really, how much good it does a business owner to be in the media. So just by the mere fact that you've been in the media is amazing for your visibility. And I know, because I speak to a fair few people all the time, I ask them lots of questions about how do you choose your coach or your hypnotherapist or your dietitian. A lot of them do look to see whether somebody's had media coverage. If they want to work with whatever it is that you can provide, they may check to see who they're picking off the internet has got some media coverage. And if you have, then that could drive people to you just for the mere fact that you've been in the media, because they believe quite rightly that if you've been in the media, then your credibility and your expertise and your knowledge must be spot on. So right from the top, it's doing all those things for you. Mm. But the other things is that media coverage lasts forever. So just because you've used it once and you've talked about it once on social media or on your blog or on your YouTube channel doesn't mean you can't talk about it again. And a lot of people forget that. So if you've been in The Guardian a year ago, I'd be merely using that piece of coverage over and over and over again. You know, every few months I'd be talking about the fact that I've been in The Guardian. So you're just increasing your visibility piece by doing that. But also, I would repurpose it a lot. So if you get one piece of media, so if I got a piece of media today, I'd talk about the fact that I've been in the media. I would share a link to that. Maybe tomorrow I would write a blog post on the back of that. I might make a podcast about being in the media and how it felt and how I got it. I might chunk that piece of media coverage down to smaller pieces to put on my blog and every time on my social media. And every time I did that, I would say, this was from my feature in The Guardian or my feature in Women and Home or wherever you are. So as you can see, it's a massive repurposing opportunity. I'd probably read it out on a podcast, or I'd read it out on my social media channel. And I would do that again in 3 months' time with the same piece of media coverage. So you don't have to be coming up with lots of different sorts of content because your media coverage does it for you. Because obviously, when you get a piece of media coverage, if you've done it correctly, it's all, it is relevant to what you're doing, and you can just keep using it. Of course, you've got your logo on the website, so every time somebody goes across to your website, it's on there as well, the fact that you've got media coverage. So I know we talk about repurposing a lot, but I think media coverage is the ultimate repurposing opportunity, because you can use it lots as you get it, but then you can just use it again and again and again. The only time I wouldn't do that is if it became out of date, because obviously often we're giving advice about things, we're giving tips and tricks from our business point of view, and those sometimes go out of date because things change. And at that point, I'd stop using it. I wouldn't stop using the logo. I still have the logo on, online, and I'd talk about the fact that I'd been somewhere, but I wouldn't repeat the feature anymore because it's gone out of fashion. But if it doesn't, I would just keep bringing it out. I just like a little old friend that you keep bringing out of the closet to put back on your social media to say, you know, 4 years ago, I was on the telly, I was on in the Guardian. Because we forget that not everybody who looks at our social media and listens to our podcasts or watch our YouTube channel is seeing us all the time. We know the algorithms are difficult to beat. So we can keep using it because it doesn't, you know, it doesn't go out of fashion. And also, of course, having media coverage means that you don't have to fight with the algorithm, because you're getting in front of a massive audience without having to try very much, really. Yeah. You're just putting out there a story or an expert opinion, and that just then goes out to loads of people and gets seen by loads of people. So it's just amazing. But what I want to remind people is that you always have to have a call to action on your media piece. So when it goes out to the journalists, you need to make sure you get that backlink. You need to make sure you put a call to action on there. So I would be thinking, if I got a piece of media, what's important to me at this moment? What are my goals for this media coverage? Do I want people to come to my website? Or am I launch mode, so I want them to go to a freebie so I can get them on my email list? Mm. Or am I just wanting them to see my, take them to my podcast or my YouTube channel? So I have a definite goal. And what I would be thinking about is what am I trying to achieve right now? So if I get a piece of media coverage, where is this backlink going to go? And I'd make sure I would make it work for me that way.
Yeah, that's really important advice, because it's something that can be forgotten really easily, because you get so excited about, yes, I'm going to be featured. And then, yes, you're featured and that's great. But if there's no follow-up, you're not leading those people to anything, it sort of feels like you've missed a trick there.
Absolutely. And I think Helen alluded to the fact earlier that once you start being in the media, opportunities just come thick and fast. So that also, of course, drives down the overwhelm, because you're getting lots of opportunities without needing to keep plugging away at social media. It just starts to happen. So you might be invited onto a podcast. So then you get in front of their audience. You might be invited to speak somewhere, and on it goes. And I find that I can stop feeling so stressed about having to use social media and be forever up to date, because all this stuff is doing the work. I like to think of media coverage doing the heavy lifting for me. Yeah. That's really doing the work. And everything else I do is supplementary to that. And that really helps me keep my mind on the fact that I need to keep driving for media coverage.
Yeah.
And I know from being an editor-in-chief too, that if you do a good job for a journalist, and this is really important, behave yourself, you know, do what they ask you to do. If they say, please write me 500 words, write them 500 words, not 5,000. Be contactable. When they ring you, answer your phone, give them what they need. And if you do that, you'll go on what I like to call the nice list. And when they need that sort of expertise again, they will come to you. So you suddenly become valuable, you become wanted. So then you don't have to be driving so hard for the media coverage, because it starts to come right to your door. And then it just sails on from that point.
That makes sense. Yeah, that really does. There's some great tips there, isn't there, Helen?
Yeah, it's just really reignited my interest and passion in it. I haven't been on Twitter in a very long time. I'm getting back on today.
No, I'm feeling excited too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think a shortcut as well, before we finish, about the, particularly when you're doing shout outs from Twitter for journal requests, what I would do is I'd keep a database of those. There's two things here. I would definitely keep a database of where you've been and what they, the link to wherever it was that you've been. because obviously you can keep sharing that. But I would also just keep a list of all the comments that you have made. So if somebody says, we need 5 tips from you about this, I would keep a database of those 5 tips about that. Because what you will find when you use this a lot is the same requests keep coming up over and over again, but from different places. So once you've got a database of all the help that you've given these journalists, you can just go to that database and pick it off again and use it somewhere else. So you don't need to keep reinventing the wheel. So it becomes faster and faster. So you're not having to sit and think every day, well, I've got to, you know, this journalist wants this, so I've got to come up with the answers to that. You could think to yourself, actually, I remember doing this a year ago for a different magazine, so I'm just going to pick that up and send it to this journalist. And they're not going to mind that at all. And the other thing is to put a set a Google alert for your name and your business name, because often journalists won't get back to you to let you know you've been used because they're too busy to do that. So you need to know when you've been featured so that you can do all this social media stuff. So, and create an alert for yourself means that every time you're mentioned, you're your business, you'll get an alert to say you have been mentioned, and you'll be able to find it and then start to use it. Don't rely on the journalists telling you that you've been in a magazine at all.
Oh, right. Those are gold, absolutely gold, aren't they?
Yes.
They really are. Now, I know that we're coming towards the end of the show now, and I just really wanted to find out, how can people get in touch with you, Julie, if they want to know more about what you do and how you do it? And also, I think you've got 2 new services coming out soon. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, the best place to find me is my website, which is iamjuliebrown.com. So hopefully that's easy to remember. And all my, you know, social media links are on there, and my email address and my phone number. So I'm visible everywhere. So yeah, reach out if they've got any questions. My email address is on there. Yeah, the 2 services that I've launched, both I'm really excited about, but the one I'm very excited about is called the Media Hotline. And it does what we've just been talking about, really. It's for coaches only of any kind. And I'm being the conduit between the coaches and the journalists. So I'm putting lots of opportunities in front of coaches through shout outs from the media. I'm getting those shout outs and giving them to my coaches, and also helping them to learn how to pitch to the media, how to answer journal requests, how to speak to the media, how to write a good pitch. So all that help they need to start using the media, I'm doing for them. And that's a membership. It's called the Media Hotline membership. And that's something I've just launched. It's live now. And the address for that is my website address. So that's iamjuliebrown.com/the-media-hotline. So it's quite...
We can put all of the details in our show notes when we put our social media up. So we'll make sure that we put that in there.
And what people are enjoying about that is, because it's for coaches only, I'm only picking out media opportunities that are relevant to coaches. So they don't have to wade through all the rest, because you do see media coverage. I saw one the other day for a ghost hunter wanted, which I thought was quite funny. So they don't have to wade through all that. I'm doing the work of picking out all the PR opportunities and putting them in front of them, telling them how to get involved. And then there's a mastermind that I've launched, which isn't open at the moment, but it's well worth talking about. And that's called Get Visible, Get Clients, because not only do I work with the media, I am a visibility coach. So it goes much wider than that. I do help people with all the social media stuff, the emailing stuff, the storytelling, the writing content, and just generally being visible. And of course, that includes reducing the overwhelm and making sure they're using other ways of becoming visible so that they're not driving themselves and everybody else in their family completely bonkers.
Wonderful. Well, they sound absolutely amazing, and we'll put all of the details into our show notes for everybody. Thank you so much, Julie. It's been a real pleasure having you here today. Yeah. Lovely to see you, Helen. And looking
forward. Thank you, Julie.
You're welcome.
Yeah, thank you, Julie. So this has been Lisa Moore and Helen Packham for the Brighton Business Show here on Radio Reverb on 97.2 FM. The show is available as a podcast and to download and listen again on our website. And we will see you back here in October.
Radio Reverb.
Radio Reverb.